Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you were a PhD student in 2008, did you expect that you'd get here?
No, not at all. Sorry, that was hopefully these laughs. I do have sort of a very sporadic laughs, or laughs that can be quite loud at times. I'm known for a loud laugh. A lot of comedians know that it's me at the back of the room.
This is Wicked Problems. I'm Richard Delavan.
I end up doing quite a lot of different stuff across the entire kind of spectrum of climate change, and that's something I never really intended to go into or thought would happen. I was just doing very specific academic research in a specific area. But as soon as I ventured out into climate communication, all of a sudden you're expected to have opinions about this, that, and the other thing.
Matt Whiting was earning his PhD in climate policy at the same time he was carving out a career in stand-up. In his 2021 book, Hot Mess, What on Earth Can We Do About Climate Change?, he describes the moment in 2017 where he sprang a PowerPoint deck about climate on an unsuspecting audience in Croydon. 7 years later, he's stuck with both the comedy and his work on climate and environmental economics in those other two centers of comedy gold, UCL and Oxford. So in his book, he says, I like to tell people I'm the sort of doctor that if you have a heart attack on a flight and somebody asks, is there a doctor on board? Then I'll rush to your side and berate you for flying. So Matt Whiting, thank you for joining us on Wicked Problems.
Not a problem. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, Richard.
And you are also going to be headlining, I suppose, one way of putting it, comparing the Innovation Zero event coming up soon here in the UK.
Is that right? Is correct. Yeah, I think I'm hosting the awards, Innovation Zero Awards, the very first one. It's quite nice to, be doing something that is hopefully helping to sort of bridge an important thing between innovators and companies that actually need to be doing better but don't know where to start. And it's quite interesting to do. I do quite a lot of events now, which wasn't the case a few years ago. A lot of these events didn't exist, or, you know, there wasn't the interest in climate change, even say 5 years ago. So it's interesting because I end up doing quite a lot of different stuff across the entire kind of spectrum of climate change. And that's something I never really intended to go into or thought would happen, but because you're sort of expected, I think when you start doing stuff on climate, you can often end up having to be knowledgeable about an inordinate amount of different aspects of climate change. And that wasn't the case for about a decade when I was just, doing very specific academic research in a specific area. But as soon as I ventured out into climate communication, all of a sudden you're expected to have, opinions about this, that, and the other thing. But it is actually quite nice to talk to people from, and see what's happening in lots of different areas that I normally, wouldn't interact with, and types of people I wouldn't interact with. And so, I think of compared to, you know, other people in the climate space, I do the entire spectrum, if you know what I mean. Right. You end up talking on the one hand to, you know, large and, you know, multinational companies, and I'm also doing events with activists at the same time, and, right. I like it.
And speaking of that, I mean, I saw you speak at the Net Zero Festival by, you know, put on by Business Green last autumn, and we had James actually on the program last week, where he was talking about, well, we talked about a few things, including the XR invasion, stage invasion, at the time, because I know for a fact that's now taught in communications classes in the UK about how to handle an unexpected protest, which I thought was pretty good. But also one of the things he mentioned that resonated with what you just said was that, you know, like the beat that he's been covering, the team's been covering at Business Green has been, you know, all of the environment, all of the economy, which is kind of doesn't really leave a lot out.
Yeah.
So I suppose when you're, you know, like it's one of these things where you it started out as kind of a specialism, and now you basically there's an inflection about everything in politics, in the economy, in technology, etc. And so, like when you were a, you know, newly minted would-be PhD student in 2008, did you expect that you'd get here?
No, not at all. Sorry, that was a hopefully these laughs. I do have sort of a very sporadic laughs, or laughs that can be quite loud at times. I'm known for a loud laugh, even within the comedy circuit. A lot of comedians know that it's me at the back of the room laughing at their jokes because they know what my... So I apologize if there's a spite for listeners at that point in time. But it's nice to be caught out. I did not expect to be where I am today in any way whatsoever. I remember having a conversation with my... So basically, I worked for an investment bank for a year and then went back to university to do... a degree a master's degree in economics, of which the only thing that sort of interested me in doing it was the environmental kind of part of it. And I basically thought I would go back and work for, you know, a big investment bank, shall we say, and go down that career. Mostly because I think that's what's expected of you with certain background, you know, not that that's my background or anything, but, you know, very, if you do well at school, you know, people push you in the direction of jobs where there's lots of money, that sort of thing. So it was this weird contrast where I was sort of expecting to go back into a certain career, but applied for a PhD looking at renewable energy in 2008, and only applied for one PhD, was offered that PhD. And then I remember having a conversation with my dad because I didn't have any other job offers at the time. And I was like, I think I'm going to take this. And he was like, oh, yeah, renewable energy. That sounds like, you know, he knows nothing about the subject. But it was very much like, yeah, it could be a thing in the future, was basically the general gist of the conversation.
Is that definitely not as common in Glasgow as I think you've said elsewhere? You know, there's been a murder. Can you just say for us, for the audience?
There's been a murder. There we go.
Oh, bless. But yeah, so you were talking to your dad, and you took this post.
Yeah,
you
know, and so I started that with sort of no expectations exactly of what I was going to do. But I realized that I did. There was an interest there on climate, and not many other people were interested in it at the time. But it was something that I clearly thought I could care. You know, I cared about, and I knew that that was going to be something that would help motivate me. And then comedy sort of started at the exact same time. And that was then something that was even more... I mean, obviously I cared about climate, but comedy's sort of something that I cared about and is also quite fun at the same time. So then that sort of took over a little bit, and I was doing these two sort of career paths, as you said, for about 8 or 9 years, really, as two very separate things. And then I brought them together. And then that was the challenge. You know, at that point in time, I'd been working on climate change, but I'd never communicated it to a wider audience at any point. So this was about 2017. And so I basically had to work out how to communicate the problem to people that probably didn't want to listen to someone talk about climate change. How do you do that for an hour? So I basically, went out, tried a bunch of stuff, booked myself in to do the Edinburgh Festival for whatever it was, 25 days, and did a show every day there, and it took a while, but yeah, with a lot of effort and a lot of a lot of learning along the way. You know, you have to take on feedback, right. You have to and work quite hard at it and edit, and a lot of editing and all that sort of stuff. Then kind of came up with something that I think worked, that was very different from anything that I'd done before. But it meant that I probably had to learn quite a bit about climate that I wasn't sure about communicating, because it's, you know, I'm not a physicist, I'm an economist by training, so it wasn't the sort of physics of it and everything wasn't really my expertise, so I had to do a lot of reading on that. And some aspects, you know, transport's not an area that I've done a huge amount on, and I had to sort of delve into that at least to enough of a degree to talk about it. But I did soon realize that with the types of rooms that I was playing and doing, I was always the person that knew the most about the subject in the room. So then I kind of went, oh, okay, no, this is, even if I'm not an expert in it, I know enough about what's happening on different topics to be able to talk about this to a wider audience. And
an expert's only the person in the room who knows 10% more than anybody else in the room.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So, I mean, how have the audience reactions changed?
Mm.
You know, over those 7 years. I mean, so like this is 2017. It's kind of pre-Greta breaking through. It's, you know, kind of, you know, things are, it's still a bit, we're still reeling post-financial crisis. Things are kind of revving up. Trump is now in office and things have gone a little bit sideways. So like, what's the difference between when you're playing, you know, to a house now versus back then?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because, yeah, the wider context does matter for audiences and people's knowledge and that sort of thing. So I actually started writing the show pretty much right at the end of 2016. So I started writing it probably just as we're, 6 months after the Brexit vote or something like that. Trump's literally just come into power. And I was like, I'm going to write about climate change. And it didn't feel like it was on the kind of everybody's radar at that point in time. I mean, if you worked in climate, then I guess a little bit, we'd just had the Paris Agreement. There was a bit of sort of momentum there, I think.
Mm.
So it was a weird one. And then, just as I was sort of taking the show to the Edinburgh Fringe was exactly when Trump pulled out of the Paris Agreement, which gave me something topical to kind of hang stuff onto for the show.
Right.
Which was nice. But back then it was, I think, really audiences were a lot less engaged generally with knowledge about the subject, didn't perhaps have as strong opinions about the subject. And a lot of people were not as up to speed with kind of the general facts even about what was happening. And you did get quite varied responses in terms of, you know, very positive from a communication and comedy, but some people would be like a bit taken aback by what was actually happening and being like, I didn't realize it was this bad sort of thing. Whereas I think audiences nowadays are a bit more aware of where we are and it's more going into the nuances a little bit, or the delving into topics a bit more.
And you were kind of, I mean, in that way, I mean, you had the kind of, again, even though you would portray yourself as not an expert in all things climate, which I think is, again, a testament to your academic training of having a humility to it, as opposed to some other people who have met who, you know, like think they know everything, but everything after 10 minutes on YouTube. But anyway, the point being that you are somebody who takes that very seriously, and the culture, as you say, the context has kind of come further in that direction.
Yeah.
And I mean, even on the comedy side, you know, we've had people like Raleigh Williams and we've had, the kind of climate science translated project with Nick.
Nick Aldridge, who I actually met the other day for the first time event. At Channel 4. It's interesting. I was the only person for a while doing anything in this space. And most of the other people that do stuff I have met now and chatted with, right. Which is nice. And everybody's coming at it from slightly different perspectives or whatever. But yeah, it's really evolved over that time. And in particular, I think what I saw was 2017, it was very much seen as a bit of a leap and a bit of a nobody's really done this before to this extent. Mm. Now, there was, if we want the actual history of this from the UK comedy scene, so Mark Watson did a show in 2000, and he's going to have to correct me, 8 or 9, when he did Al Gore's training, you know, whatever it was, the climate reality project whatever it was. So he did, Mark Watson went and did this, and then took a show to the Edinburgh Fringe that was it's ostensibly the exact same thing, which was like a sort of PowerPoint presentation about climate change. And he did it a decade before anyone else did, but far too, you know, he was ahead of his time by a long, long way. And then there was one other show that I was aware of, which was Johnny and the Baptists, who are a musical comedy act, who did a show, which I didn't see either, about climate change. I think the 2015 or 2016 they did it. And again, musical comedy, it was about explaining stuff to their, I think one of their nieces or something like that.
Mm.
And theirs was probably a bit more, they're quite political and stuff as well, so it would have been quite a political show, I would imagine. But I guess then when I came and did the show in 2017, the thing that I had was I had worked in climate change for, you know, pretty much a decade at that point in time. And so it was probably a bit more backed up by, even then, it's just people, and I think people probably still occasionally do assume it's an act or assume that somebody's coming on stage and calling themselves a doctor or an academic, because they're like, why would a person that's an academic want to do this? You know, I imagine there's still a few people that think that. But I think having this sort of credentials made a bit of a difference because I just had the level of confidence to talk about stuff that perhaps other comedians maybe hadn't had at that point in time. And I think that made a bit of a difference to the way it was perceived. But then, as you say, then so 2018, we had that really, really warm summer in the UK. And that sort of, I think, tipped things over. So I did another show that was August in that year. And I could see things had changed slightly, but there was maybe one other person talking about it or something. You know, it wasn't like many other people, but there was definitely a slight ramp up of it being part of people's experiences. And I think was still really fresh for people that year. And then 2019, everything had already tipped over because we'd had protest. It was part of the zeitgeist that year, essentially. And it was sort of enormous. And I did another show that year, which was very I was sort of doing progressively angrier shows. And audiences were sort of changing to be a bit more, would you say? I'd say I probably was beginning to get more climate, people that were interested in climate change coming to the shows by that point in time.
Right.
There weren't many people interested in climate or like working in it, or, you know, young people coming with their families to see the show. There wasn't a huge amount of those. But by 2019, there was quite a lot of people would come up to me afterwards and be like, I'm here with my daughter and she wants to work on climate change. She's 16, wants to work on climate change. She's thinking about going to university. What should she do? You know, there was a lot of sort of
different vibe,
very much across different age groups. Felt very zeitgeisty. Everyone else at the Edinburgh Fringe that year had a joke about climate change. Like every single person that I went to, other show that I saw, had at least a bit about it. It was just part of what was happening. It felt like it was, you know, the kind of main thing that year, I think. And then COVID happened and everything, and it, you know, completely tipped. So I was going on a UK tour, my first ever tour, of which I did one date before COVID hit. And then it was... And the whole sort of momentum of that, you know, the first one went really well. And then the rest of the tour that I did, whatever it was, 2 years later, was actually a bit tougher because you didn't have that sort of buy-in of it being part of the culture and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So it's been interesting kind of coming back. It feels like there was a sort of pre-COVID thing where we were really building with climate stuff, and then COVID, and that sort of reset things a little bit, and it's now, I think, coming back. You know, it's never going to disappear, obviously, but it's sort of like, how prevalent is it in the sort of day-to-day conversation beyond, you know, you and I and other people that are talking about this every day, you know, the normal person. But I think there's a level of now, there's a sort of minimum level of understanding it and interest in climate change from audiences that wasn't there 7 years ago, say.
And even zooming in a little bit more, I mean, so what's been better material comedically over the last 6 months? Would it be the ULEZ thing? What Rishi Sunak's done with that? Mm-hmm. Or would it be, you know, if you wanted to go the other way, what Keir Starmer has done by walking away from the $28 billion investment commitment and the Green Deal?
Oh, what is better stuff to talk about? I mean, I think the ULEZ stuff is easier as comedic material and is a bit more of a kind of two-sided thing. It's probably... yeah, easier to make funny, but I don't think it's as important a thing to talk about. And there's a real balance between, like, you kind of have to, with comedy, you do have to sort of decide what you have to make things consistent with your persona on stage. And there's a whole bunch of, like, comedic choices that you're limited by who you are, like what your face looks like, or what, you know, and other decisions you may make along the way.
We're going to take a quick ad break and come right back. So stay tuned.
Hey, here are some ads to help pay the bills. If you'd prefer a version without ads, subscribe to our member feed at wickedproblems.earth. A monthly subscription is cheaper than buying us a pint.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And so there's sort of, it's really tricky. Someone, I think, would probably do the ULEZ thing really well and go into it. But what I would struggle with is that I think you then come across maybe more political or making it a kind of, which I think works for comedy and would work for certain comedians. And it's probably an easier thing to do. But I think for me, that wouldn't quite work with what I'm trying to do, which is trying to portray, well, here's what you need. You know, the way my shows tend to be are very sort of, got a phone call.
It's all right.
Phone call from a carpenter.
I can understand that. Like, it's you have to, the limitations of you versus somebody who's just, like Raleigh Williams came at this just, you know, as a comedian and then did a degree, but like came at this with a particular thing. He did a very good shtick of doing an impression of Al Gore, not as good as Mark Watson's, but not bad. And it kind of made a thing out of it, and then decided he wanted to get an advanced degree in order to be more credible. But he was starting at that point where it's like, I'm an entertainer first and foremost, but I'm going to backfill my academic credentials. Whereas you were coming at this the other direction, having had the academic credentials. And so you have to maintain this balance, which I suppose is tough. And so you can't do the full Mark Steele, go on the radio, go on the news quiz, and just basically just completely unload.
Yeah. And I could, you know, because, maybe I could at some point, but I think...
Well, you should try it.
Yeah, maybe. But I think it probably... there's different roles for different comedians to play within the sphere of, like, how do we get information across? And as you say, I'm probably trying to sort of remain reasonably balanced and sort of trusted as an academic, independent sort of academic across the entire thing as well. So, yeah, there's, but yeah, and I definitely came at it from that academic perspective of everything needs to be checked and, you know, backed up and, I almost seem academic, seem like I'm taking academia and then just twisting it to make it more comedic, right, essentially. Whereas, as you say, someone like Raleigh or whatever is kind of taking a specific topic, diving right into it and then picking it apart from a comedic perspective, which is great. He's also slightly younger than me. I mean, he doesn't look it, but he's slightly younger than me and therefore has quite good video editing skills and other internet stuff that I am terrible at. And the main problem I've had is not wanting to learn how to edit videos.
That is nobody really likes that, and that's why I'm hoping AI is going to help personally.
I'm hoping so at some point. But it's a world that I probably will delve into more, the online world. But then the whole online thing, I guess you do get very people will view things that back up their own opinions, and it does become quite...
I was going to ask you, because I do think that's the interesting thing about, like, the audience has changed over 7 years in terms of people you would see at a gig, versus an online audience. Because, again, I'm not saying this is true for Raleigh Williams, but for most people who make a living doing stuff on YouTube or whatever, you generally have to chase... really refined version of a persona that fits into a particular niche, and you can just see the data that's telling you exactly where what's hitting and what isn't. And so you're going to just double down and double down and double down and become more and more of a caricature as opposed to the kind of a little more, it's just harder in a smaller venue kind of thing where you've got not necessarily the chorus or the choir who's come in to hear you all the time.
Yeah, and I really like the balance. You know, I ideally would want the majority of the audience to be people who are just, decided to book some tickets to a comedy event.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hoping for, and how I write the shows is very much aimed at that sort of audience. And a fair amount of them will probably agree with your opinions and stuff as well, but it's not, it's not sort of intended to narrow that audience. It is hard. The hardest part of doing comedy on climate change, in my opinion, is marketing. How do you get people to watch something that you will know will be helpful for them, or that they'll enjoy, certainly first and foremost, enjoy, but that they'll look at, what is this, and go, nah, I'm not going to spend my spare time doing that. And it's one of those ones where once you get in front of people, once people come to the shows because their friend brought them, or once, you're at the Net Zero Festival and you're in the audience and you come and you see it and you go, oh, right, this is, and it's that's the trickiest thing, is once you can get in front of people, you can tend to prove yourself. And that people, there is a purpose and an enjoyment, and there's lots of positives. But it's just, how do you get in front of people in the first place? And as you say, you can build stuff online with your own, refining that audience. But how do you break into new audiences is the other question. And I wouldn't necessarily call myself old school, but I basically did stand up for so long that I'm used to just, you write a show, you take it out, you put it out there, and you hope that it, people like it and it'll grow and stuff. I guess I think of myself as writing stuff about climate change for people that like comedy, that want to watch. So anyone that would come and watch most comedy in the UK, I'm like, right, I just, I'm aiming this at you and hoping that you will somehow gravitate to this.
Right. And so you're going to be comparing the awards event, part of the Innovation Zero event that's coming up in the UK. And you, I suppose, as a sector, I suppose climate tech isn't really particularly renowned for having the best sense of humor, in the sense that a lot of folks are super, super earnest for all the right reasons of wanting to actually, you know, save the planet and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas, it does feel that in the time that you've been doing, have merged these two things, you've had so many tech bros who've pivoted from, you know, like Silicon Valley level of satire to doing, do you imagine there'll be some satirical opportunities in the climate tech sector in the coming years? And will you go there? Because I would pay to see that.
Yeah, definitely. I imagine there is. And there's all, as you say, there's a lot of sort of earnest but and well-meaning people there, you know, in that area. And I have actually done, I've done two tech events already. They're reasonably good at laughing at themselves, I think. Maybe not everybody, but I think, I think they generally are. But there's definitely quite a, as you say, quite a rich vein of people who think that they have silver bullet solutions to stuff that they absolutely do not, and it's just it is occasionally nice to take those people down a peg or two. I think most people enjoy that, and I normally have some stuff towards the end of the show about who, you know, I'll maybe not go for the big ones that we all know, you know, your Bezos and your Musk or who, you know, some of these people who give pronouncements, Bill Gates, you know, people that give pronouncements about climate change as if they know a lot about it, but have zero touch with reality or actual in-depth knowledge about a subject. And that those people are always fun. And normally by the end of the show, I've sort of build up to, you know, taking down one or two of them a little bit because they just piss me off.
Did you happen to read the Isaacson bio of Musk?
I've not read it. No.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to recommend this to you because there's one section in there, right, which is describing. I mean, I think he gets reporting from both sides, but like Bill Gates and Elon Musk walk into a bar. Like, and literally there's like reported both sides, but what that encounter was like, I just think there's such like, oh man, like if nothing else, this, it was probably not a Saturday Night Live sketch because the audience would probably drop off, but still
you could have
this comic.
Yeah. The old,
he kept some fun with that.
Englishman, an Irishman and a Scotsman, but it's Musk. Bezos.
And Gates and Bezos walk into a bar walk into a rocket or something. So look, where can people find you, Matt, other than, you know, coming up for Innovation Zero? There are other things that'll be, you know, gigging you'll be doing.
Yeah.
Where can people come and see you?
So, check my website. I will update the dates, which is mattwinning.com. I am doing the Huntless Comedy Festival in Wales in May, the 4th of May. And that is going to be the very first incarnation of a new show. The next few months, I'm doing some sort of testing a lot of material. I'm doing the Edinburgh Fringe this year for a week at the end, I think the 19th of August 2024, just in case you're listening to this in another year. The idea is basically to put together by the end of then have the bones of a new show that will be developed over the following year. So ideally then in 2025, you'll see a lot of me. So basically 2024 is going to be testing out stuff around London, Oxford, at the Edinburgh Fringe, a few various comedy festivals and stuff like that. Some different events that I'm doing over the coming months. I'm trying to think of any that I'm allowed to talk about. I don't know. A few events here and there, hosting a few things. And then, 2025 is when I'm going to be annoying you a lot by showing up on lots of feeds and telling people about things.
And so people can definitely keep in touch with that.
Yeah, please do.
Mattwinning.com. And also you're a great follow on LinkedIn, I must say, which is not something that every, I can say true as every comedian, because like most of them would like, why would I do that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's weird. It's so hard to balance that sort of serious stuff with the comedic stuff. And then I don't quite know whether to have like, you know, one social media platform where you're serious and then another one where you're funny. And I just sort of, I don't really have a rule. I just sort of mess about and try. And I think it's nice to have some funny content on LinkedIn because it's always a bit too
I think
heavy.
It can be, yeah. And I think, look, I mean, and Gary Lineker, if you're listening,
yes,
you know, I'm available to pitch with Matt Winning the Rest Is Climate for Goalhanger. Just saying,
why don't we
like,
do that?
You know, like we should definitely.
I mean, we've both got quite good voices for this sort of
and
stuff.
beards,
yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
People you know, people like our accents. I'm going to go out here and tell you what the new show might be about,
great.
Purely because I want it to be on record in case anyone else deals the idea.
Please.
But so I'm want to put together another kind of comedy lecture about climate change, but I want it to be interrupted by protesters and have a sort of staging of that happening on, you know, throughout the show, so that there's, and I don't know how many people will be staged in there, but I imagine there'll be at least one, if not two, maybe audience members and stuff. I want to basically turn it into a slightly theatrical piece as the show goes on. I was going to try and do that this year, but I sort of haven't had the time mostly time. So I'm putting it out there that's what the show's going to be.
I think that's good because I do think it's in the ether and, I don't know if you're mates with anybody who's still in XR or, you know, just .boil or anything like that.
Sort of know a few people. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Obviously, they did the stage invasion, you know, and we did talk to James about his coping with that.
Yeah.
But actually, I went to see Matt Smith, Enemy of the People, on Friday on the West End.
Yes.
And then, I don't know if you saw this, but like on Broadway, the Jeremy Strong version.
Somebody sent it to me that I'd also told about my idea and said, somebody's already but it seems to be happening. Yeah.
Your idea was first. The timeout review of it, like the audience didn't know it wasn't part of the show until the third protester actually interrupted. And then the cast member kind of just like broke character and then finally kicked them out. But anyway, like, so yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you saw that. It's already, as you say, in the ether. And I feel like what it would offer is, because a lot of these, you know, the discussions that we have about protests and other things happen very quickly on either social media or they happen on some news channel where it's Richard Madeley interview. You know, there's no way to actually explore the intricacies of protests and in a way that is A, enough time, but also B, kind of shows you different sides of it and does it in a positive and hopefully funny way, whilst also hopefully having people being like, is this part of it? Is it not? I've had the idea since even last year in 2023, but it's just finding the time to sort of do it. So hopefully 2025 is when that's going to kind of be out there.
I look forward to, you know, if I hopefully make it out to Wales your debut gig for this, but if not, then hopefully see you sometime else soon. And in the meantime, before I let you go, we ask everybody who comes on the show whether there are a couple of things that you might recommend to the audience that have shaped your views about climate, about comedy. It could be books, they could be plays, they could be films, they could be anything. Just things that have given, like, really made a mark on you.
It's interesting because I always want something to spring to mind that's very kind of obvious for other people or that's helpful for other people. And it never tends to be. There never tends to be something clear. So my answer to that is the conversations that I have with people who I don't tend to have regular conversations with are the things that tend to inspire me the most. So I was at COP28 this year, and you end up chatting to someone from a country that you've never been to that's there representing their country. And those conversations are the things that really stay with me because it's not someone I know, it's not someone that I have shared experiences with, but it's someone that is involved in climate change, that's doing something that's clearly, you know, meaningful to them. I guess we don't have enough conversations or we don't have enough examples of people on the front line of climate change impacts being given voices. And whenever I talk to people those are the conversations that I really, you know, that really inspire me, and that really keep me, you know, wanting to double down and wanting to keep going and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, in the UK, we don't tend to have those people beyond a news segment of someone, you know, coming and saying, oh, my house has been flooded or whatever. But, you know, those people aren't, there's not like a TV show that's, you know, half an hour of these people being given proper voices on a regular basis. So, yeah, for me, it's probably that.
No,
otherwise,
helpful.
Inspirational people, lots of inspirational comedians. I'm a big fan of... I'll recommend one. So one of my friends, Stuart Laws, him and I are... He's a very good comedian. He's on tour at the moment. And he and I are sort of trying to start up like a kind of climate comedy collective. And the idea is mostly to get comedians that have nothing to do with climate change but are just interested in the topic to make a bunch of sketches, mostly online stuff, maybe in kind of live stuff at some point as well. But he's got a production company, he kind of works on, you know, he produced James Acaster's Netflix specials, Nish Kumar's Netflix, stuff like that. So he's very much on the production side and is a very good stand-up. And him and I have done shows together in the past. And then I'm sort of coming at it from the climate perspective. And then we're going to try and, you know, make some more climate content essentially to put it out there. But hopefully it's, again, comedic voices from the UK that aren't, you know, necessarily, you know, me. Because at the moment, a lot of it has been to this stage. And as you say, there's a few more people, but it's often been me talking about climate change. And it'd be nice to get, you know, some other voices and opinions and stuff like that out there. So that's something that I'm, yeah, hopefully working on in the near future.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And actually, one last thought, I suppose. I mean, you know the Obama anger translator sketch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
See, I think now that Chris Stark is stepping down from the Climate Change Committee, him being a compatriot of yours, and going to Carbon Trust, I think...
Yes.
Having heard him off the record, I think that there could be a Chris Stark anger translator thing that could work really well.
Yeah. He's a very nice man. He's a very nice man. I've not heard him go off too often off the record. But yeah, that could work.
But look, thank you so much, Matt Winning, for joining us on Wicked Problems. I hope you will come back and do this again. And in the meantime, we wish you the best for this. And in the meantime, we will, of course, put up links to mattwinning.com.
Wonderful.
To, of course, anything else that you'd like to point us to. And then we'll leave you to the rest of your evening.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I feel like we just got started. So I'll absolutely come back. We'll talk everything.
Brilliant. Lovely. Okay. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Wicked Problems, made possible through the generosity of people like you. If you liked this conversation, please share it and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like an ad-free version of this podcast, consider becoming a paid subscriber at wickedproblems.earth. You'll also get our newsletter, all our show notes, member-only goodies, and you'll be supporting media that wants to tell the stories at the frontier of climate tech, the place where people and politics, technology and capital meet and shape the future. And whether it's one you'd want to live in. Wicked Problems is written and edited by Richard Delavan. Production assistance was provided by me, Theodore Delavan. Wicked Problems, Climate Tech Conversations, is a production of Wicked Problems Limited. Thanks again for listening.